can't stand your cold, and I can't stand your pain.
Good morning, Oroville, and the whole wide world. This is Krishna McKenzie, and I'm gonna share with you today a little bit deeper this unfolding relationship with Mother Nature vis-a-vis the food that we eat and where it comes from. So last week we started to touch on the subject of soil, and soil is really where the whole story begins. Every civilization on this planet worshipped the soil, either in India as Bhumidev, in Europe as Gaia, in South America as Pachamama. The soil is the divinity, is the mother, and it's very easy for this to become a concept that soil is divinity, soil is, Mother Nature, as though something such as a divinity is merely a concept. But actually, if we look at the soil with all its life, the aliveness of the soil, the microorganisms, molds, bacteria, insects, earthworms, fungi, the small animals, the mycelium, we start to understand that the life is the fertility. And this fertility is this divinity. So it's not merely a concept in that sense. It's really the actual life in the soil. And if we go a little deeper into that subject, we start to see that the more life there is in a soil, the more structure there is to a soil. So the more structure there is in a soil, the more porous a soil is. The more porosity a soil has, the more water retention it has, and the more easy it is for water to move through the soil. And water is very much part of the vessel through which nutrients are moved to the soil, to the plants. So structure, life of the soil, both equal the divinity. So it's not a concept. It's something very physical. And then we start to see, well, how does that soil come about? Well, if you go in the forest here in Oroville and you have a look around, you'll see leaves have fallen, sticks have fallen, branches, seed pods have fallen, animals are decaying, flowers are rotting, weeds have grown up and died back. And you have a little look inside that world of decomposition, that ecosystem with little fungi and all sorts of, micronutrients and the mycelium and all the life you can't see with the naked eye. We start to see that this natural phenomena of organic matter decaying is how a healthy soil comes about. So in the farming, in permaculture, in your back garden, in your kitchen garden, returning leaves, returning weeds, returning grass, returning straw, returning all sorts of organic matter that you have back to your garden is the best thing that we can do to help develop the soil. I would say that when we return a bucket full of leaves back to the garden, maybe if you have a tomato plant growing and around it you put a thick layer of leaves, that very act is not only, it's not only practical just to reduce the evaporation and reduce the soil temperature and to return the organic matter, but it's actually that practical act is an act of love to Mother Nature because it facilitates this healthy soil. So when we start to have this healthy soil, we start to have the basis upon which a whole civilization can emerge. And we start to move away from this trying to manipulate and define nature by saying, oh, we need this much nitrogen and this much phosphorus and potassium and this and that, but we're rather looking at just that we don't understand what the health of the soil is. We know that nature understands healthy soil. So by adding organic matter of diverse types, you know, leaves and branches and weeds and grasses and flowers and seed pods and what have you, the diversity of that organic matter equals the diversity of nutrients that are available to the plant. It's a bit like, you know, when we have a meal, we're not only going to eat, bread and sugar or bread and milk. You're going to have some salad of different types of leaves and spinaches, and you're going to have vegetables and proteins, lentils. So you want to have a diverse diet that makes you to be healthy. So it's the same for the plants. Diverse organic matter returned to the soil will result in diverse nutrients available to the plants. Healthy plant means the whole question of pests doesn't emerge because the plant's healthy. You know, it won't get attacked if it's healthy. If a plant is pushed out of the soil through a very compost-enriched, you know, nitrogen-based fertilizers, then the plants are often weak. So then they get susceptible to attack by insects. So a soil that's diverse in nutrients will have healthy plants that don't get attacked so quickly by what we call pests. Although in nature, in my eyes, there are no pests. Man has created pests, rather. So we see this beautiful soil now we have in our gardens, in our fields, in our public spaces. We have this healthy soil that we've created. And into this soil, we start to explore, okay, what are we going to plant in there? How do we start to create a sustainable, long-term vision for food in Oroville? Well, I would say it starts with the most simple thing that we could do would be to plant fruit trees. The fruit trees that I would explore are the most easy types of fruit trees, like custard apple. There's the fruit tree in Hindi, it's called Ramphal, which is the sister of the custard apple, the Sitaphal. In Tamil, we call it Attaparam, or in English, bullock heart. These trees, they just grow so easily. They're like weeds, actually. And the both of them produce abundant amount of sweet, fleshy taste, you know, fleshy, sweet fruits. The bullock heart in particular is a favorite of mine, and in solitude we have so much of it growing. It's just come up as a weed everywhere, and we sell it in our little farm shop, and people can't get enough of it. You know, they're absolutely crazy for it. And you can make sort of a custard from it. You can make a smoothie from it, or you just eat it like that. It's very delicious. And then we have other fruit trees like the chiku or amla, mangoes. Jackfruit, of course, shouldn't be forgotten. And then you have fruit trees that take a little bit more care, but not too much, a little bit more care with heavy, heavy mulching and a little thought about where they're planted. All the citrus family. So you have sweet limes and a whole diversity of types of lemons and kumquats and tangerines and what we call natangay, which is sort of a very juicy citrus that's used to make pickles, but also makes a delicious juice. And then there are plants, there are other fruit trees like the berries, which again, they take a little bit more care, but the pitanga and the acerola. And you start to see that, hang on, if we started to understand the fruit trees that don't take any care and start planting them everywhere, and then slowly, slowly, where we have the possibility of having more water to put citrus, put the chikus, put the mangoes, put the amlas, put the jackfruits, and start to cover our spaces with fruit trees, we'll have an abundance of fruit in Oroville, which at times we already do. But the problem is that people are also eating apples and grapes and pears and fruits that come from very far away. You know, apples and grapes and pears, they don't grow here. So on one level, we create a solution by having an abundance. The papaya is the very good example which I gave last week. We in the food link in the season, you can have up to 150 kilos of papaya coming in a day, and yet you can't move that because people are not understanding the value of papaya. You know, they might like it. They might have it, you know, once in a while, or maybe they even have it, you know, once, twice a week or something. But they don't understand this, that the papaya, for it to be valued as a fruit, we have to use it in different ways. So the first way to use the papaya, as an example, is as a green papaya. So you take it before it becomes a fruit and you make a vegetable dish. When you peel it and grate it, you can imagine that it's a carrot, and then you make, you know, whatever you want, a Thai salad, or you put it in a soup, or you fry it up as a vegetable, or whatever. There's so many diverse ways to use it. And the next way to use the papaya is when it has a little orange streak on the skin, yet it's still hard. It means it will become ripe. So at that stage, you peel it, cut it up into cubes with ginger, and you could possibly put some fresh turmeric if you had it. You put it in a mixie with some water, blend it, and then filter it with a filter and a cheesecloth, and you get a liquid juice that's very much like a carrot juice, only better. You know, it's very, very tasty. And then the next way to use it is as a fruit, you know, and then of course you can make smoothies, and you can even put it in the fridge and have it as a sorbet in the freezer, have it like as a sorbet or an ice cream, and you can make chutneys from it. So when we start to understand, wow, we have so many papayas, and the way to value them is to understand to use them in different ways, this is a very, very important thing. Because again, we could be planting ramphal everywhere, the bullock cart everywhere, and then people would say, ah, yeah, but it's in, you know, we don't use it that much. It's because they haven't explored how to value this fruit. So my vision is that of abundance. And as I say, with abundance goes along an understanding of creative uses of these foods. So, you know, that means sharing recipes and Sara Kundig, who is a wonderful vegan chef, raw food vegan chef, who lives in La Ferme in Oroville. She has a YouTube video that's called Keep It Raw, and she's publishing lots of examples, lots of videos which are very, very good examples of how to value the diversity of local foods that we have around us. So anyway, going back, we have our healthy soil. We start to have lists of fruit trees, and we know that Paul in the botanical gardens has so many because he's into this, and then Krishna has it, and this one, and different people have lots of saplings, and there's a movement of understanding through good communication work of the values of the trees, and we start to have all those fruit trees. And slowly, slowly, when they give fruit, our diet gets a little more defined by what we have rather than what we want to eat. So we start to use these fruits more in our diet. That's what I see with Sara. And I personally have to say I'm not at her level yet. I hope I come to that point. But she has this little garden in La Ferme where she has all sorts of spinaches that, you know, I've been a little bit involved in helping her get started, but now she's at it for about 4.5 years. And a lot of spinaches and papayas and bananas and plantain, and there's some mango, and there's a little bit of soursop and different fruit trees and some different vegetables. And her diet is defined by what she has. But because she's very creative, you know, it's an amazing food. She's just put out a video with how to make sushi paper, you know, this nori, with dried papaya in a dehydrator. And I think she put in dehydrated tomato slices into the paper. I mean, then she brought some to Solitude and we made some sort of sushi wraps with it. It's quite incredible. You go, wow. There's another use of papaya. You know, who would have thought? And it's so exclusive. It's so tasty. It's so refined and elegant. That type of creativity is very, very important. Because if we just sit with what we think we know, oh yeah, I like it, but I don't like it that much, then our experience, which is extremely limited, is what is defining our society. So that's not okay, you know, that's really not okay. We have to keep exploring and keep growing. So again, sorry, I keep getting going off on a tangent, but I think the example of what I'm trying to say about using local food and understanding the value of local food and being creative with it is really a very key component here in this subject. So we have our healthy soil that we've created. We've started to put fruit trees everywhere. And then we're on the next point. So the next point is to start to understand what other things can be intercropped with the trees. So the first thing to think about, you say, okay, well, I'm really busy, you know, I'm someone working very hard in Oroville, but I don't have so much time. But okay, I've with a group of friends, we've made the little circle garden, we've put a fruit tree. What else could we add to it? Well, you add a banana and a papaya next to the fruit tree. That's the first thing that you do. Possibly a drumstick as well. So you've got three plants around your fruit tree at maybe about, say, 30, 40, 50 centimeters away from the fruit tree. And as you're irrigating that fruit tree in the beginning, that you might give it some care in the first few months, those other plants are also getting some irrigation. And you have your beginnings of a little garden. And then you say to yourself, okay, well, what other plants can go in with these in between these plants? And then you start to see, well, we've got a fruit tree in the middle, which is our long duration plant. We've got our medium duration plants, which are papayas, bananas, because papayas and bananas aren't fruit trees. Banana is a grass. And the drumstick also, I wouldn't consider that really as a tree as such. It is, and yet it's not. Also, it grows by just cutting a branch off and sticking it in the ground. These are your medium duration plants. So those last about 10 months. I mean, they take about 10 months or a year or so to grow. And let's put more of those types of plants in. So you got pineapples, another 10 months, tapioca, another 10 months, some turmeric, that doesn't take 10 months, but it takes a bit more time, like 6 to 8 months. We start to see that we have these guilds, these groups of plants that have certain time durations. So the fruit tree is the long duration. The medium duration is tapioca, pineapple, papaya, banana, drumstick. These plants, they are medium duration. And then again, you have another group of plants, which is your short duration. And those can all be defined by plants that are 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. So you have lady's fingers and eggplants and tomatoes when the season is there, and cluster beans and different vegetables, basically. And then we have another guild, which is your very short duration plants, and those are your spinaches. Those are all the plants that just take 8 weeks to grow. You know, you pop them in and boom, they grow. You know, they're so fast, you can start eating them within about a couple of 8 weeks or so. Even some of them are faster than that. If you put the amaranth seed in, I think within 4 to 5 weeks you can start harvesting it. So those are the very short duration. And by understanding the difference in the physiology between those plants and the time duration, we can start to form little gardens and eat from them. You know, all of these plants, of course, they're local foods that are the aim is that we eat these foods. Then there is one other really beautiful aspect of this intercropping. And for me, this aspect is the most interesting, because it's the aspect that you don't have to do anything about. And it's the plants that come up on their own. It's the plants that are really, you can say, native to this bioregion. Because chilies, tomatoes, peanuts, they're not native. They're all from outside. And a lot of the vegetables we eat, they're quite domesticated. So they do require a certain amount of care and maybe to grow in a nursery first and then to transplant them into cups and then bring them to the field. So there's this whole aspect of having to actually still do a lot of, you know, intervention, you know, to make the garden happen. But then there's a whole group of plants which grow without any effort. And those plants, they are very, very tasty. They have very high medicinal and nutritional values. They grow with next to no effort. If you give them a little water, of course, they'll grow better, but they grow with very less water. And they really are the ancient fabric of our nutritional culture, you know, the culture of this bioregion. And they're basically weeds, you know, edible weeds. So the first of them that I try to introduce into these gardens, or that introduces it itself of its own accord, is the turkey berry, which is known in Tamil as sundakai. And it's a wild eggplant, a wild brinjal that grows as a bush of about, I'd say, 6 to 7 feet high, a couple of meters high. And it's got these clusters of pea-shaped brinjals with beautiful little flowers, and we harvest these little brinjals. We take them off the. It's a little bit of a work to remove them, but not too much. But and then you smash them and you steam them, and then you can cook them in a curry, or you can cook them as a vegetable dish, you know, with some ginger and garlic and chili and all of that. And it's very, very, very good for diabetes. It's very good for parasites. It has a whole range of health benefits, but it actually tastes good. So in the basket service that we've been running, I see this plant as quite a reference, because prior to the lockdown, it was not so popular to be putting this in the basket. But with the lockdown, I think people have become more and more aware of local foods. They've become more and more open to the idea of eating edible weeds and such plants. And although some people still are not that big a fan of it, a lot of people tell me, wow, it's become my favorite food, and I've made this dish with it, and I made that dish with it, and I start making chutneys with it and kurma with it. And it's amazing to see that such a plant that has, it's almost, you know, disregarded. Disregarded would mean that it had been regarded in the first place, but it's not even disregarded, not even looked at. It's not even thought about. People don't even know about it. You know, if you point it out, they go, oh, yeah, yeah, I saw that on the side of the road somewhere. But such a plant that has, you know, it's almost insignificant, has taken on a nutritional significance. So such a plant, as I say, with its ecological values of using less water, its nutritional and medicinal values, its thus economic values, thus making it much cheaper, its value in that it takes no expertise to grow it, those values are so essential to a society. If a society is eating foods that have those values, that society is not destroying this planet. That society has truly a sustainable, you know, nutritional culture. So I see a lot of promise in that plant. And again, it requires videos from Sarah and videos from Solitude and communications. And, you know, it requires a lot of education. It requires going to schools and getting kids to be engaged in planting and harvesting and cooking. And, a lot of communication work is still needed. But something is happening with that plant. So that plant would be inside our little garden. And there are a lot more plants like that that I will be sharing with you in coming up radio shows in the next weeks. But I think we'll leave it there. That's a lot of information for 1 week. I think to start to open one's eyes to what's local. Don't be fixed on our habits of what we like to eat. Start to find out. I mean, if we went to live in, I don't know, Peru, or we went to live in, I don't know, Iceland or wherever, first we'd have to find out what foods grew there naturally. Otherwise, obviously, we're contributing to climate change. Obviously, we're contributing to, you know, pollution through industrialization, food miles, etc. So to explore what foods grow locally, to understand the values of local foods, it's very important to embrace a language. So important. Because otherwise, how can we know that this little weed that has this particular shape with these flowers is good for our bones? And this other little weed that you can pluck these things and make a little spinach dish is good for our eyes? How can we understand that culture? So language is implicitly part of this subject. So to embrace a language maybe doesn't mean necessarily that we all have to learn perfect Tamil, but I think it means letting go of what we know, emptying our cup, letting go of all, you know, our habits, our preferences, our opinions, and come to a point of not knowing. And in that point of not knowing, maybe we can start to find out what is there. If we have the habit to have cornflakes every morning, and that's what we like and that's what we do, and we don't consider the effects of, you know, the industrialization of cornflakes, then of course you will never come to the value of ragi. I mean, it's pretty obvious, no? So I think a lot of this is about opening our hearts, opening our minds, reflecting that this is pretty basic subject. Wherever we are in the world, this is a subject that people have to start exploring and embracing. So check out Turkey Berry. See if you can find it on the internet or Sundakai. If you are Tamil, come on, you know about this. Go and find it and go and make a dish with it. And if you have some neighbors who are from other countries in Oroville, offer it to them. Get them to try it. Share it. That's a huge act of love to Mother Nature socially, if we can share this information, but share it practically, get people to eat it. Next week, I will share some more. Thank you so much for being with me and giving me this chance to talk with you. We have a lot of videos on Krishna McKenzie YouTube channel. And as I said, check out Sarah's YouTube channel as well. Keep it raw. That's very inspiring. And we'll see you later. Take care. Bye-bye. Walk you on the waters, far out to sea. deep beneath the ocean waves, that's where you'll understand me. And I'll walk you through a desert night beneath a million stars. The emptiness around us tells you who we really are. Sing to me, love of my life, you are found. The rain is pouring down. Sing to me, love of my life, you are found. The rain is pouring. Sing to me, love of my life, you are found. The rain is pouring down. Sing to me, love of my life, you are found. The rain is pouring. Instrument was the rain. Then came the voice of man. The first instrument was the rain. And then came the voice of man. Sing to me, love of my life, you are found. The rain is pouring down. Sing to me, love of my life, you are found. The rain is pouring. Sing to me, love of my life, you are found. The rain is pouring down. Sing to me, love of my life, you are found. The rain is pouring. If only you look inside, you would find me here. I'm fast asleep. If only you would open your eyes, I'd smile at you in every passerby. Love of my life, you are found. Love of my life, you are found. A love of my life, you are found. A love of my life, you are found.